Elliot, I did journalism today.
Uh-oh.
Elliot, I did journalism today. I feel like you. Last week, I asked a question, and today I got an answer. Is that journalism?
That is journalism.
Okay.
Yes.
Here's my lowercase j journalism. Last week on the podcast,
yeah,
I put forward this scenario. Boston Bruins are playing. Brad Marchand breaks his stick. He goes by the bench. Chara sticks his out. Marchand grabs it.
Yep.
Marchand scores a goal with Zdeno Chara's stick.
Mm-hmm.
Does it count? And today, I went to a source.
Was the source a referee?
I can't say who it is because I don't want to embarrass Stephen Walkham like that. So I called Stephen Walkham this morning and presented the scenario to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, goal, wouldn't take it away, but the other team can ask for a measurement. And if there's a measurement, then there's a penalty, but we wouldn't take the goal away.
Wow, that's...
But the measurement would have to be specific based on length of the shaft, not on, you know, how wide the stick is or length of the blade or anything like that.
So it's sort of like the pine tar game, right?
What, the George Brett game?
Yes.
The Casey New York game?
Yes. And for those of
you... No, they took the home run away from him, though, didn't
they? Initially, but then they appealed and changed it.
Uh-oh. That's gone.
Well, see, this wouldn't even take the goal away at all.
That's what they eventually decided. And for those of you who are younger and wondering what the hell I'm talking about...
And now the Royals have the one-run lead.
There was a very famous baseball game around 1983, the Royals versus the Yankees, which was a big rivalry at that time. And a Hall of Famer named George Brett hit a home run off Goose Gossage, another Hall of Famer, to put...
Junior hockey fans, George Brett's one of the owners of the Spokane Chiefs.
Yes, and his brother, Bobby Brett, is the one who does Mike Babcock's contracts.
Really?
Yes.
Was he the guy that hired Bill Peters to coach Spokane then,
Yes,
too?
I think so.
Interesting.
Anyway, so he hit a home run off Goose Gossage, and it put the Royals ahead of the Yankees in the top of the ninth inning, and out came the Yankees and appealed that he had too much pine tar in his bat.
George Brett has just homered, and Billy Martin and the Yankees want the bat. Look at Martin.
Well, what they're talking about, Frank, is that he's got too much pine tar, and... You've got to have a certain amount of distance from the trademark of the bat and the pine tar.
And Nettles is leaving the field as if the game is over. Bobby's just coming in.
I'm not sure. They might have a legitimate gripe. And the umpires are going to get together. George Brett looking around and wanting to know what's going on. And the umpires are going to get together and talk about this thing.
Well, Billy Martin bounced right out of the dugout.
I've seen it called before, Frank.
Now they're going to measure it across home plate.
Well, I've never seen this.
I never have either.
I don't know what they're measuring. They might be going to call George Brett out.
Well,
they
he's out.
Yes, sir.
Brett is out. Look at this. Brett is out.
And Demon Bat.
He is out. And having to be forcibly restrained from hitting plate umpire Tim McClellan.
Brett went bananas.
Oh, he comes
Brett
screaming out of the dugout, banana sandwich.
He's a
style.
Crazy man. And the Royals lost the game. Well, they appealed it. And they won the appeal. They said, same thing. Bat should be thrown out, but home run should still count.
Same thing.
So they came back and they played the rest of the game at a basically empty Yankee Stadium a couple weeks later.
See, I love the visual of empty stadium, by the way. Just as an aside... I love empty stadium games for all sports. Just the visual
of
it.
Because you liked Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler and Memphis
Wrestling.
That is
a really hip reference, by the way, that not a lot of people are going to get, except for a couple that listen right now. And the empty arena match is a great visual.
The best thing about that George Brett thing was when they restarted that game, Billy Martin, the manager of the Yankees, had Gossage throw to all the bases. Saying we appeal that George Brett
didn't touch all the bases.
And the umpires called him safe at every base. And he was like, how the hell do you guys know? And I guess the crew chief said to him, we knew you were going to do this. And we went back and we looked.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, there's your answer to the stick length question as it stands today. Goal stands, but you can ask for a measurement on the stick. And if it's successful... It is a minor penalty, and if you're not successful, it is a penalty to you.
Show continuity
is the call.
I'm not used to this.
One other thing that my conversation this morning led to, as an update on Steve Barton, who went down that Edmonton-Columbus game yesterday, Werenski and Connor McDavid, Barton goes down, hits his head on the ice. All extremities were moving yesterday when he went to the hospital. The NHL, the officials, and certainly Steve Barton were appreciative of how the first responders acted and security specifically at the rink. Was kept overnight, released this morning, and this morning was on his way home.
That's great news, because that was scary looking, so happy to hear that.
You know what? I'm always amazed at considering how many, I mean, there's four officials on the ice in addition to 10 players and two goaltenders. I'm surprised that officials don't get hurt more, whether it's dump-ins, just more so pucks than bodies, but although, man, they're moving so quickly right now, and if you ever get a chance, sit as close as you can to an NHL game or even an American Hockey League game just to get a sense of how fast it is. It'll change your perspective on how the game is called and how difficult it is to call effectively and how difficult it must be to get out of the way. Like, I'm always impressed with positioning of officials, Elliot, and I guess every crew is a little bit different than the next, and I'm always interested in where the next group of officials are going to come from. Because right now, more so than ever, if just like players, if you can't skate, you can't keep up with this game. Like right now, I'm not sure how aggressively they recruit. I would imagine pretty aggressively at the American Hockey League level. But, I mean, you have to have played a high level of hockey just to be able to skate with NHLers in order to fulfill the obligations of either a linesman or a referee right now.
Well, it's harder than ever to get guys at the young age or women at a young age to ref because parents are such jackasses sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they tell me that is one of the biggest issues is that, you know, if you're a former player and you can start like pretty close to that level, you're kind of laughing a bit. You don't have to go all the way to the bottom. But if you're, you know, a young kid who's interested in refereeing, and you have to start making, I don't know, what do they pay, $250 a game for a whole day's worth of games?
For days, yeah, I was going to say, you're not making that per game when you're not even close. I mean, my brother-in-law is an official, I know.
I remember when I was a teenager, I had a buddy who did games. He got $50 a game. So I assume there was some inflationary rise there.
Not a whole lot, but there is a little more sugar
like
in the coffee now.
It used to be like $1 an hour, and now it's like $20 an hour. But I guess not. But anyway, like the abuse you take at that level is just unreal, I guess. It turns a lot of people off.
Yeah, I can understand that. And, I mean, there are a few. I mean, well, listen, Wes McCauley is the last man standing for the 1990 draft. Now that Jagr's out of the NHL and there's someone that played a high-level hockey. I would imagine that's where the next wave of officials has to come from. Like, you just have to be physically strong, and more so than ever, be able to skate at that level. Because if you can't, there's
no chance.
Zero chance of you making it. We got a lot of tweets today about Zdeno Chara, and this is even before the announcement of his one-year deal.
Yep.
And you wrote about Chara on 31 Thoughts as well.
Stan Bowman mentioned him.
Right, Stan Bowman mentioned him. We got a lot. But I want to get your thoughts on the one-year deal for Zdeno Chara, the $5 million one-year deal. I think we talked about this last week. Is he going to be that player that just goes on the evergreen contract, and every year it's, yeah, how does the body feel? Okay, I'll do it for one more year. I'll do it for one more year.
Bet you his body feels great.
Well, it sounds like it. And you talked about this with Ryan O'Reilly and Andreas Athanasiou in 31 Thoughts, you know, with the vegan diet now. But he's always been someone that's taken care of himself.
Yeah, I used to cover a lot of Ottawa, you know, when I first got to Hockey Night, and the Leafs weren't very good, and Ottawa was the best Canadian team, so I did a lot of Ottawa playoff series. And it was really interesting, the interaction with those guys. First of all, there were some guys who freely admitted that they were embarrassed to take off their shirt around him.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were like, look, I'm not in bad shape, but he's in such good shape, I'm not doing that. And there was a story I heard, and I actually asked Daniel Alfredson if it was true, that somebody asked Alfredson, you know, what are you doing today or after a practice? And he says, actually, I'm going to go on a bike ride with Zdeno Chara. And Chara, who loves biking and goes to the Tour de France, you know, his bike ride.
He rides the Tour de France after the races.
Right.
He rides those courses.
He's legendary for his bike rides, even in Ottawa on off days. Like, there were times I had to tell him, like, Z, knock it off. Like, you need rest. And so the next day I heard the story that was told to me by Brian Murray, was that Brian Murray went up to Chara and said, how was your bike ride with Alfie yesterday? And Chara said, he's a wimp. He gave up after 4 hours. And I once asked Alfredson if that story was true, and he looked at me and goes, that is not true. But I could see it potentially being true. The only thing I ever heard, I remember once, I lost some of my notes in a flood, so I don't have a lot of this stuff. But he once told a story about how he wanted to climb the seven summits. And the seven summits are the seven highest mountains in each continent. That's what he wanted to do.
Well, he's done Kilimanjaro. I know that for sure.
And I apologize if I'm butchering the story, but it was something along these lines. And he said it was one of the few things he tried to do that he couldn't do. He had to give up on one of the summits. He couldn't get it done. And I was at a charity event once with a guy who raised money by climbing one of those summits. And, you know, I was telling him that story, and he said to me, like, I'm proud that I'm able to do this for charity, but I think I'm even more proud that I could do something that Sedeno Chara couldn't. You know, he's a phenomenal human being. He takes incredible care of himself. I mean, Jeff, is he the best free agent signing ever?
Well, he's one of the only elite guys to ever go to market.
Yeah.
Not that that was really of his choosing, because that
was
more.
He has always said that they never made him an offer.
I was going to say, that was Muckler saying, I'll take Redden over Chara, thanks very much.
He has always said he never got made an offer.
But yes, the biggest free agent signing in the history of the game. And that's one, because of him, and two, because those guys never test market. We'll see what happens with JT.
And how he did.
Yeah.
Kovalchuk signed the biggest contract at the time, but Chara was the best in terms of the impact he had.
Mm-hmm.
It's a $5 million salary, and Chris Johnson reporting he gets $1.25 million next year for playing 10 games, $255,000 if they make the playoffs next year, and $250,000 if they win the Stanley Cup. So it's a max 6.75, and this year he was making $4 million, which was the end of his last contract. So, you know, he got a raise, and the reason Stan Bowman brought him up was I was asking Stan Bowman, do you think the window's closed? And he said, look, like, look at Chara, look at Bergeron, look at Krejci. Those aren't young guys, and look how well they're going. So I refuse to believe our window's closed.
You buy that?
I think you have to believe that, unless you're going to Jonathan Toews or someone. And
see,
saying,
I just wonder about the blue line.
Well,
Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, I don't wonder about Patrick Kane at all.
Yeah.
I still think that Jonathan Toews can bounce.
Yes, I agree.
I just don't know about certainly Seabrook, and this has been a real challenging year for Duncan Keith.
I refuse to count out Duncan Keith. I just think that guy is still too good.
Yeah.
I think the biggest knock I've heard on Keith is not the way he's played, is that they keep him on power play one. He just doesn't have the shot anymore. But even that person said, you count out Duncan Keith at your own peril. You know what? Like, this is a weird league, Jeff. You can never tell who's going to be good and who's going to be bad year to year.
It's funny, too, because as quickly as it can turn around, see New Jersey, see Colorado, it can go the other way even faster.
Yes.
Just that nature of the league. All right, let's start the podcast here. This is 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
So Elliot and I go back quite a ways. I was at the Fan in the early 90s. I'm a year or two older than Elliot, and I got there a year or two before he did, as far as I can recall. And back in those days, I used to think that I had a pretty good mind. I could retain facts and figures and pull them out on the air whenever I needed to, and I thought I had a pretty good thing going. And then this new guy shows up, Elliot Friedman, and I mean, his brain was on an entire other level from where mine or anybody else's was at the station. Every time I knew something, he knew it faster. Every time I didn't know something, he knew it right away. He's just got an unbelievable way of retaining every bit of information that he's ever known. So if there was like a knowledge belt at the Fan back in the early 90s, I took it off, got down on a knee, handed it to him, and said, I am not worthy. His mind is unbelievable. And if you don't listen to 31 Thoughts, you're missing out. Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman, 31 Thoughts.
How about that from Dan Shulman?
Well, I mean, that's really flattering because we all know that Dan is the greatest at what he does. It means a lot coming from him.
Did you used to big dog him with trivia back then?
No,
big dog
him with really info? Tried not to.
Actually, like, Dan.
No,
actually, Dan.
I'll tell you a story, actually, Jeff. When I first started the Fan, I didn't say a word. I talked to people about this. Like, you need me to do this? Yes. You need me to do that? Yes. You need me to jump? How high? Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. As one of my friends jokes with me, that's the last time I really kept my mouth shut. And I started as an intern at the same time as another guy who had a father in a prominent position at Telemedia, which was the owner of the yep. Fan at the time. And I remember there was one time Dan came into, like, we were both working in the newsroom. I think we were cutting tape, writing scripts, whatever we were doing back then. And Dan came into the newsroom, and he was talking with someone else, and they started having this conversation. I'll never forget this other guy cut Dan off. And this guy was like, he started the same time as I did. So we were rookies. And he's like, no, Dan, you're wrong. And he cut him off, and he Oof. Was kind of belligerent about it. And Dan didn't care, but other people did. Yeah. And I remember somebody walked up to me and he said, you know, you have some potential, but you're going nowhere if you do that. You're never going to see that guy again.
I think they refer to that as a CLM, career limiting yeah. move.
So, you know, the thing about Dan was, like, he was, first of all, he was a great mentor. Like, he is so good, and he's got a podcast coming now. That's a big deal, and that's great for us here at Rogers because, you know, it's going to be a hit because it's Dan Shulman.
Swing and a belt.
Swing and a belt. And Emil, I understand, is doing the audio for that too. Actually, just remember, Emil, where your first priority is.
Stepping out on us
yeah,
already.
Yeah, like seriously, don't forget who knew you first, okay?
Already. Oh, Shulman. Oh, yeah.
You know, the one thing I do remember was I covered a lot of basketball. This was before I covered the NBA.
I'll drink.
And they were talking about something on the radio once. And I called the producer. I said, I know the answer to this. They were talking about Colorado State in the NCAA basketball tournament. Mm-hmm. They were just joking about when was the last time they made it. I just happened to know. So I called in and I told them. And I found out later that I was still new. And Dan said to the producer, we're going to check this to find out if this is actually true. So this was pre-internet. And they called Colorado State. And they said, when was the last time you made the tournament? And what were your results?
Yeah.
And by this time, it had been a while. I'd gotten out. I was driving in my car with a couple friends, and they came on, and they said, you know, we were talking about Colorado before, and one of our interns, Elliot Friedman, called in, and, you know, he told us this, and we weren't sure if we believed him. So we called the school, and they brought the producer on. It was Peter McPhee, cub reporter.
Yeah.
And he said, no, we called the school, and Elliot was right. And I'll never forget this. Dan said, basketball fans, there's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Elliot Friedman.
Polish the badge.
And I almost drove off the road.
That's awesome.
I will never forget that as long as I live. That was like the first time I ever really got name-checked, I think.
We used to, I did a show with Macko and Strombo back yeah. when we first did 95.
Game.
Yeah, game. We used to have a phrase, and I think the first time we used it was about Dan Shulman. When we thought someone was at a certain level, like above and beyond, that guy or gal wasn't good. They were American good.
That's
like,
good.
Oh, yeah, Shulman, yeah, no, he's good, but no, he's American good. Like, this guy can hang in America. Some of you have, you know, immigrant broadcast fantasies about America. The streets are paved with gold. Everything is better there. It's all fantastic. I think Shulman was the first one we actually referred to on air as American good. Dan Shulman, American
and he
good.
He was and is.
Certainly true. All right, to 21 Thoughts, the podcast this week. By the way, nice plugs for our buddies Glenn Healy and PJ Stock in the blog this week. Want to do a quick little nickel and dime on those who start with heels and the alumni?
Sure. Well, Glenn, you know, runs the NHL alumni now, and he's committed. He wants to make a difference. He's a big believer in. He wants to improve some of their lives post-career.
Yeah.
And one of the things he's big on is improving medical care. He wants to see if he can create full medical coverage for a lot of people who don't have it. And he was at the GM meetings. It's the first time they've ever been allowed to go. And he pitched, like, for example, one thing he'd like the teams to help with is if there's a player near a team and they have a medical issue or someone in their family has a medical issue, can the team doctors be made available? And, you know, Glenn wouldn't tell me, but he felt they were receptive. And he said that there were some people, teams specifically, who reached out to him later to ask for more information and how can we do this. So
would that
he's
be
hopeful.
That be an NHL thing or a team by team?
This I don't know. That would be a question for Glenn.
I would
answer.
Imagine that some teams would have no problem with that.
He didn't want to tell me because he doesn't want to blow up his chance. But he did tell me that there were some teams that were very receptive and said, we are going to work on this. So, you know, that's good. I mean, at the end of the day, Glenn always has his heart in the right place. PJ's an interesting one. At some point, we're going to bring him in here and we're going to do the podcast with him.
Oh, yeah.
It was, some of it was self-preservation that I wanted him to become assistant coach because there were days I just couldn't stand sitting next to him anymore. Because PJ is a motorman. Like, he can bring it and bring it and bring it. And I have a really thick skin, but he's good needler. And I'd be like, just shut the hell up already. But He is relentlessly positive. He's upbeat. And I've always thought he would be a great assistant coach. And he mentioned it because he said he'd like to coach someday.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think, I think he'd be a wonderful junior coach to start. Kids would love
yes.
him. Yes. Like, seriously, Elliot.
Yeah.
Junior kids would love him.
He's a kid himself.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. And he has four young kids. They're older now. You know, his brother was ill. And TV is more stable for the most part. But now, you know, he said, like, it's always been something he wanted to do and the time is right. So that one, I admit, I put in there because I want to help PJ and I hope it helps.
I have an audition story for 31 Thoughts next week.
Him?
With PJ.
Really? Okay.
It was my first week doing Hockey Night in Canada Radio, which was a two-hour radio show on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Okay.
Pre-XM merger. Hockey Night in Canada brand. And this is what I was hired for at CBC by Scott Moore. I think it was the first week or maybe second week. We had booked PJ, who was, I think, just starting at Hockey Night.
Okay.
This would have been 2008, I want to say.
I don't remember.
Anyway, so PJ's on, and it's like 5:30, okay? And so it's a do a little 10-minute chin wag about the Montreal Canadiens. Oh, what's going to happen with the power play? It's Theodore doing standard stuff, right? But every couple of minutes during the interview, PJ's like, ow! And he's like grunting. I'm like, this is a little bit odd. I tried just to Tai Chi the whole thing and then leave it alone. And he's cranking out these stories. You can tell he's like really uncomfortable. Like, you're trying to pass a pineapple or something? And so finish off the show.
That was one of the options.
Finish the show. And I call him driving home that night, and I get home, and I call PJ, and I'm like, first of all, thanks for coming on, PJ, but what was that? Like, you're like grunting and groaning. He's like, oh, dude, I totally forgot. I didn't want to be rude because I just started, so I didn't want to like not book myself, but I booked doing the interview with you, and I forgot that I was getting a vasectomy that day. And I was driving home, and I had frozen peas on my lap. And you know what the roads are like in Montreal with all the potholes, and I kept going over them. And every time I went over one, I was in intense pain.
That is so PJ.
But I didn't want to insult your program by not coming on the air. It was game 7 about doing a radio interview.
Oh, my God. That is so
After
him.
Turning the tap off.
If you were to tell me that we knew somebody who did that and didn't tell me the name, yeah. He would probably be my
PJ?
First or second guess.
Yeah, it was PJ.
Things like that only happen to him. Oh, my God. That's so PJ. That's awesome.
That's his
And he would do it, too. Like, he would do the interview. Like, that is so him.
Yep. Game 7 guy.
Yeah, I hope somebody hires him. I'd like to see PJ do well.
You and me both. A few things. Thought number 6. I'm going to go through some of the 31 thought. We haven't had a chance to really do this in the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. The discussion about Ken Holland. I've done a couple of radio interviews recently, mm-hmm. and this question has come up. The idea that maybe Ken Holland isn't done in Detroit, and at the end of all this, there's an extension for Ken Holland with the Detroit Red Wings, and he oversees this redevelopment, rejuvenation of the Detroit Red Wings versus, well, you know what? Seattle's on the horizon. That's where he's going to end up, and Ken's going to go home.
Well, here's the thing. We're all circling around it because we all believe it's going to happen, but nobody can get it confirmed. Like, Ken Holland's a pretty accessible GM. Like, if I text him and I say I have a question, he'll get back to you, and he isn't getting back to me on this one. And when somebody who's normally very accessible doesn't get back to you, it's because they're just like, either I don't want to lie or I just can't talk. And I would assume it's some combination of both. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something going on. I think they're having conversations. But, you know, Jeff, like, you've been around. Like, there are some guys that when they know the end is coming, they don't mail it in, but they know that the end is coming and you can see it on them. That's not the way this guy is acting. He has been a scouting madman this year. And I know Ken Holland a little bit. I don't know him as well as some other guys know him. I have heard that he is stung by the criticism he's gotten. When you're in media or you're working for a team or you're playing, that's the way it is now. Social media.
But a lot of that, though, is, I mean, he's surfed on some pretty big success for a lot of years.
Yeah, he has.
I would imagine he's just not used to that.
Well, I think there's that. And the way it comes now in social media, it's harsher than ever. It comes at you in waves. It's more real. Yep. Your family sees it more. It's more visceral. you know, the one thing that somebody who is a pro Ken Holland person told me, they said, look, the Detroit Red Wings did a lot of things to keep their streak going. It was very important to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that they have talked in that organization before that if we had just let the streak die sooner, how much better would we be off?
If they hadn't skinned first-round draft picks
yes.
over and over.
Or, you know, certain decisions they made and things like
we'll
that.
We'll do the Legwand deal. We'll yeah. Play, okay.
Like, what would they be better off? And from what I heard, the answer was, yeah, we probably would. But that was our identity. Like, we believed in that. It was important to us. And I think he's kind of like, you know, like, that's the reason we made a lot of those things we made. And I think he really likes the idea of fixing this and trying to improve it. The other thing, too, is even if Seattle gets a team right now, Jeff, when are they going to hire a GM? 2-3 years?
Mm-hmm.
So I heard 2-year extension. Craig Custance heard 3-year extension. You know, you can still do that and go become the GM of Seattle. So I think he's staying. I think Blashill is staying. And I think they're going to come back with
this. See, that leads me to – I'm glad you mentioned Blashill because there's – for the first time since 1967 – again, there's still a little bit of time left in the season, but it looks like we're going to go wire to wire, bell to bell, without an in-season firing behind
yeah.
the bench. This hasn't happened since the league doubled in 1967. You do wonder, and you guys talked about this on Saturday on Headlines, specifically about Joel Quenneville, and if that domino goes, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
But are we headed to a Black Monday
I think so.
In the NHL?
I saw you and John on Sunday night.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about it. It's interesting. I don't know if we've ever had anything quite like that before.
Well, I mean, who knows about Chicago, but Calgary, Rangers, Islanders, Carolina, you say Detroit's probably not going to happen, but Ottawa, Edmonton, like there's outside of teams that didn't make the playoffs that have first-year coaches, Arizona, Buffalo, Vancouver, is it kind of jump ball out there for everybody?
Well, I think there's this. Like, there's Dave Tippett there. There's Daryl Sutter there. I think Daryl Sutter is going to get looks this summer because he's the ultimate turnaround guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He comes in, he fires you up for 2 years, you see what you can do, and then if it's too much, you move on. But Daryl will get looks.
Calgary, the obvious one there.
Yeah, but there's some different situations. Like there's Quenneville, but it's a big ticket. He's got $12 million coming to him. As far as I'm concerned, like I still think it's nuts for Chicago to fire Joel Quenneville.
Agreed.
I'm just wondering if he's looking at it like it's time for me to try something else. And then there's the delayed reaction, which is Barry Trotz. Who's without a contract. Even if he wins the Stanley Cup.
You think
I think there could be a chance that he wants to move on.
Well, let's go through them all then. Yeah. I mean, you talk about Chicago. Calgary Flames, that's a delicate situation right there. And, you know, if you're talking about Daryl Sutter, that might be the obvious A to B.
The one thing is, like, Brad Treliving's made one coaching change. A lot of GMs don't like to make two.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a tough year there this year. And I don't think that Glenn Galzin deserves to be fired. But, we know how this business goes.
There's some, who was it? Was it Larry Brooks? If it wasn't Larry Brooks, I hope I'm not attributing this to him fraudulently, but there's been some speculation about Lane Vigneault.
Yeah, Larry Brooks has been writing that a bit, okay. And Larry's really plugged in on the Rangers, so if he thinks it, you got to think it's possible.
See, the obvious one there would be then, because it is New York, if Quenneville goes, that's where he goes.
Okay, so let's just say the Rangers get, say, Kovalchuk and, for argument's sake, Tavares, or they bring back Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I could see that. But what if you don't like what's available in free agency? You don't go out and swing for a trade that helps you now and you stay young.
Is Quenneville your guy to do that?
First of all, I think Quenneville can do anything. Does he want to do that? And do you want to pay for that?
If you're the Rangers, no problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, that's the thing. Like, if you're Joel Quenneville and you want to be compensated at that same rate, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can't get that from all 31 teams.
Yeah.
You can get that from New York.
Yep.
And they're happy to pay that.
You know, he could sit for a year. He can write his own ticket. What does he want to do? Edmonton, to me, is the real strange one. I don't know how to read what they're going to do. When Bob Nicholson was on our show a couple weeks ago, he really gave me the impression he did not want to make change for the sake of making change. And they were starting to go pretty well. Like, they were having one of those late season runs, and they got wiped out by Columbus the other night. But what if they say, we're coming back with the same head coach and same GM?
But the question then becomes, what would that be based on? What would that decision be based on?
We're not this bad.
If they do that.
We're not this bad.
What is that based on? Which is the real year for the Oilers? Which one is closer to the real Oilers? 2 years ago or this year? So they ask a question you have to ask yourself.
I can't believe they're this bad.
Can you believe they were that good 2 years ago with this same team? Or did they just get saves?
I just believe they got saves. They got saves, no question about it. They got some big concerns that they have, but like if you're asking me to pick between the two extremes, I would pick last year over this year because I just can't believe they're this bad. You know what derailed them at the beginning of the year? Two things. One, Talbot, he wasn't the same.
Yeah.
But Drysdale's injury.
Where he...
I'm not going to
dodge questions.
Well, look, like...
I should say dodge questions. It was incredibly vague about what happened.
Yeah, they were vague.
Was it the Minnesota hit or who knows?
It was I think it was Winnipeg.
Was it Winnipeg? But, I thought it might have been Minnesota.
But like, look, they were vague. Whatever happened, it derailed their season.
Yeah. And you know what? I still think as well, Connor's illness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Connor McDavid, there was that Saturday game against Dallas where he was as green as the Stars' jerseys and he played.
Yeah.
And was outstanding for the first half of the game. And then I guess it just caught up to him by the end. But then he kept playing. Where most hockey players probably would have just been like, you know what? I feel just terrible. I need to heal. I need to rest.
Yep.
And that wasn't McDavid DNA, and he played all the way through it.
Yep.
And then wasn't the same. Like, you look at this McDavid that we're seeing now, you know, the guy that's going to win the Art Ross Trophy. It's a different guy than we saw when he was going then.
Like, he was scoring in January and February, and he was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's celebrating goals again.
How much of it is he celebrating having Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on his left side?
Well, it's going to be interesting because maybe that's Nugent-Hopkins' new lease on life in Edmonton,
mm-hmm.
is a winger.
See, I don't think you would get full value for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins if you put him out on market, which is why I've always been in the camp that says keep him.
Centers always have value. Now, the question is how much value, but centers always have value.
On that, we're going to pause. We're going to come back and speak to Dale Tallon, the general manager of the Red Hot Florida Panthers. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. Pleased to be joined now, Dale Tallon, the general manager of the Florida Panthers, one of the most exciting and hottest teams in the NHL as we speak. How does that sound, Dale?
Sounds great. I'm enjoying it. It's fun to watch.
How did this all come together this season? And is there a specific game or month or week or something where you said, you know what, we're turning this thing around?
I think the last time we played the Islanders in New York. We had a real solid 60-minute performance. We shut them out, the high-powered offense that they had. And from that time on, since the All-Star break, I think we were probably 26-1 or something since that particular game. We were 3 or 4 games under 500. And, you know, I think the coaching, the system is more comfortable. We had a young team, young defense especially. 6 of our 7 defensemen had not played 200 games in the league. You know, only Keith Yandle was our veteran player. And so, you know, new coaches, new system, new players. And I predicted that it would take us probably till Christmas to get it going. And now we seem to be more comfortable with each other and trusting the system and trusting each other and playing with a lot more energy.
Did you see this, though? Like, you've seen a lot in your career. Did you see this run in the second half of the season?
Yeah, because I think we have a lot of talent. We're very young, but mm-hmm. we have a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very close-knit group. They've been together a while now as a group. Some in the minors, some in our indoctrination camps, all of those things. These are the drafts. I think we have a dozen drafts on our team right now. And, you know, Mammon and Malgin and have come up and filled in and really performed excellently in the positions that they're playing. Give us more speed, more skill, and they're part of our core group that we believe will help us get to the promised land.
Mm-hmm. Dadonov's been a real nice
drafted him originally. Well, I didn't draft him originally, but we inherited him when I first went to Florida. And then he went back and found a way. He got himself in shape, changed his work ethic and his attitude. And the last few world championships that I've been at, he'd been arguably one of the best players in that tournament. So you know, I liked the fact that he got on pucks, and I felt that he would be a good fit to play with Barkov or Vinny Trocheck because of his ability to get on pucks and make plays from down low. And, you know, we missed him for about a month, and that hurt us. But lately he's been on fire, and he's been playing great, and his attitude is terrific. He's happy to be in Florida. He has a place there. He had a place there anyway. So I felt after watching him play in the World Championships, he'd be a good fit for us.
It's an interesting comment you make about playing with Barkov or playing with Trocheck. Is there, in your mind, because you've seen plenty of wingers come and go, in your mind, when you look at your two centers, Alex Barkov and Vincent Trocheck, 1-2 up the gut, when you look at your roster, do you say to yourself, okay, this guy is a Barkov compliment and this guy's a Trocheck compliment? Or are we at a place in hockey right now where by the time you get to the NHL, your skills need to adapt and you should be able to play with anybody?
Well, ideally that should be the perfect scenario, but that doesn't happen very often. And so when you're drafting and you're putting a team together, you know, obviously a simple answer is a left-hand shot. You'd like your scorer to be on the right side and your two-way defensive forward on the left side. And conversely, a left shot scorer if you have a right shot center like Trocheck. So that's the ideal situation. And lefty, righty, you know, speed defenseman with a stay-at-home guy. Those are the things that are kind of staples and things that you go with. But I think today it's, you know, it's not a center, left wing, right wing anymore. It's F1, F2, F3, you know, and it's, so it's a little bit different, you know, and all the things that we were taught, standard and wing and check your point and all that stuff. Well, that's gone by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Now it's five guys in the picture and everybody's in the corner and everybody's in front of the net. Everybody moves together in units of five. So it's a whole different deal. But yeah, ideally you want a player to be able to adapt to a centerman. You know, we put Huberdeau with Trocheck. Yep. It might be that he and Barkov had such great chemistry. They played a style that was really comfortable for each one of them, more puck possession down low. And so Huberdeau's had to make an adjustment because Vinny's more of a shoot first and then pass second guy. And so Huberdeau's had to make the adjustment. But it's made our team better because we had more depth in the first two lines.
Does it bother you that a player like Barkov doesn't get more attention?
Well, it doesn't bother me, but I think that it's just a matter of time before people are starting to get, you know, more and more. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen a kid that throughout his career as an 18-year-old, he was the best 200-foot player that I'd seen in a long time. And he wasn't getting a lot of due because we weren't having a lot of success, and we're not in a major market, obviously, in Southern Florida. But he's starting to get his due, you know, playing the All-Star game. I think that was a step forward. And then people are starting to identify, well, who the heck is this guy? You know, he's going to get 80-plus points. He's going to be a plus player, and he's kills penalties. And he's probably the most reliable two-way player, you know, one of the most reliable two-way players in the league.
The one thing I'm interested in is last summer you had to hire a coach.
Right.
Chose Bugner. You know, you had Jim Montgomery in there. You had a few guys in there. When you're in an interview process, Dale, again, you've been around a long time. You've seen everything. Nobody can BS you. How does a coach?
Well, it's going to take a really good BSer because I'm probably the best at it.
So, how does a coach win you over? Like when you're in a meeting with guys like Montgomery and Bugner, how does a guy sell you on, yes, that's the guy for the job?
Well, I think, you know, we talked before going on air here, the passion. You know, you look in the guy in the eye and you look and you see the passion and the desire and the willingness to do the job, to work hard and to believe in what he preaches. And you know, it was a tough decision. Those are, you know, the final guys. I interviewed 13 or 14 coaches last summer. And Jim Montgomery's a really good coach, and he's going to be a great NHL coach, I think. And, you know, he had success in Denver, obviously. But I liked him. He was down to the wire. But in Boogie's sense, he came in most prepared of all the coaches. He had his tech pack. He had his systems, and his presentation was incredible. And his passion was undeniable, you know. I just felt that that was the most important for our team. Plus, he's a contemporary guy. Plus, he's had experience with young junior players winning in Windsor and developing players there, and then what he did with Brett Burns. And so that was probably the deciding factor for me, was his preparation was second to none, and his enthusiasm and passion for the game and his willingness to work with young players, I think, was really what put him over the top.
One thing I wonder about, when a GM makes a call and says, this guy's my coach, like we're going through right now, like we sold our house, we're looking at buying another house, and sometimes you have those moments of buyer's or seller's remorse.
Right.
Do you ever have that moment where you sit there and you say, boy, I hope this is the right call?
Well, I've had a few I've hired that haven't worked out, you know. That hits you in the face, you know. But no, not really. You move on, and once you're committed to that person, that's what it is. I don't have any remorse at all, no. even the guys that I fired, it turns out that they were the right decision.
You know, in media, as you well know, you know, you're certainly not encouraged to cheer for teams, certainly for individuals, but you also generally tend to cheer for the big story and what gives you the best story. Can you give us, Dale, a sense of what a Florida-Tampa opening round matchup would mean to that state?
Well, I think it'd be just a huge impact for the game in that area. I mean, it's, you know, that's something that Steve and I have talked about. You know, they've been ahead of us a little bit for a while, and I said someday when we catch up and, you know, we have an equal kind of team, it'll be great for the game and it'll be great for Florida. And I think that's we're getting there. And hopefully that will happen because I think it'll have a tremendous impact, not only for us building new fans, but creating more energy as far as kids wanting to play the game.
How good do you think your team is right now? You mentioned, you know, when we catch up to you, Steve, when we catch up to Tampa.
We're in the initial stages now with, you know, signing Bjorkstrom, getting him in the lineup. You know, we're going to be really strong up the middle. And the experience our young defensive game this year, you know, everyone thought that that would be our Achilles heel moving forward, that we had a very young defense core and that would be a difficult adjustment for us. But those guys are on the job training and, you know, they learned a lot early and had some tough nights. So, you know, we're getting there. We, you know, with Owen Tippett coming, we're going to go younger again next year. We're going to add a couple more pieces to it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to let, the, you know, like John Madden said, you know, open the barn door, let the horses go even if they're blind. You know, so we're going to – I love young players. I like, you know, we did it in Chicago and we're doing it here in Florida. So we're just going to let them learn on the job.
I'm glad you mentioned Bjorkstrom because that's something I've wanted to ask you about. And there have been a couple of times you mentioned Barkov, and that for a lot of people was a surprise. Barkov in 2013 going second overall, most had Seth Jones in that spot. Bergstrom was an interesting one because not a lot of people had him projected into the first round. The Panthers obviously did and took him. And I'm wondering how much of that second overall with Barkov was Jari Kekäläinen, European scout brother of Jarmo, and same for Henrik Bergstrom.
Yeah, he's a great scout and very persuasive. And he's very smart, and I trust him. You know, he put his neck in the proverbial noose on Barkov and fought hard for him and stood strong. We didn't make that decision until the morning of the draft. We had a lot of hearty discussions with Seth Jones and Barkov and Druin and, you know, down the line. We had different opinions going into even the Friday morning of the draft. And he fought hard for him and believed in him, and we liked him a lot. Sure. It wasn't really a big risk. What had happened was that Jones was probably the legitimate guy, but we had good Branson and we had some depth on the right side. We felt that Bjugstad and Barkov, one big righty, and we didn't have a lefty in our organization at center.
Right.
And I believe strength is up the middle is the most important thing in a franchise. So I felt that that was the way to go, and Jari really pushed hard for him. In the Bjorkstrom case, he had grown 9 inches in a year and had back problems, didn't play, missed a lot of hockey. And Jari had kept an eye on him, close eye on him.
And he was playing junior. He wasn't playing men's league at that point.
No.
Why I think he fell off a lot of people's radar and he sort of...
Yeah, well, he just grew. He was a tall, gangly kid and, you know, he wasn't exposed to a lot of scouts. But we saw him at a camp in... I saw him in a camp in the western suburbs of Chicago that summer and I was pretty impressed with his ability to handle pucks in traffic.
How was his interview with you? Because I talked to one team at the Combine who said, we need to call him back because we can't believe what just happened in there.
He had a great sense of humor. He was a funny kid. You know, he had, and get to know Barkov too. He's a witty, funny kid too. He doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, it's pretty impactful. And that's what I felt about this kid. He had a quiet confidence about him, had a great wit, and he was a very cultured young man. He very smart and well brought up. And I just liked that he had some character and he had some great answers as well.
Spoke to Jim Montgomery last night. He said this kid's ready. Like at times, you know, I don't know if he's ready to play center yet, but he's ready.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of depth at center. So, you know, we put Bjugstad on the wing and Malgin on the wing. And last night he played centers. You know, I mean, like I said, it's not center ice anymore. It's F1, yes. F2, F3. So it's really a starting point for me. You know, if you can win faceoffs, that's another important part of it. You know, if you're smart, you can play any forward position. It's just a matter of just following what the coaches want. But Jim told me the year ago that he wasn't ready. I think selfishly he wanted to
try and repeat, right?
But I respect Jim Montgomery a lot. I think he's a really good person and a really good coach. So, you know, I think he's ready too.
We do some history, Jeff.
Of course, yeah, please.
So one of the things, like, Dale, you have a good eye for finding players. And the book Moneyball in Baseball was written by Billy Beane,
mm-hmm.
who was a, you know, didn't have a career that people thought that he was going to have. And he used his own disappointments to discover players. You had a very good career. You were second pick overall. But how much does your own experience shape the way that you find players?
I think it's very important. It's part of my DNA. You know, it's what I want our team to play similar to the way I like to play. You know, I like puck possession, and I like high-risk defensemen. I like guys taking chances and moving up ice and getting involved in the offense. I like, you know, six guys back and five. I like pace, and I like guys that can make plays, and I like unselfish players. And so I thought that I was that type of a player, high-risk guy, especially on the back end when I played D. At center, I was more of a safe player, but as a defenseman, I like taking chances and like moving the puck and getting involved in the offense. And I like teams that can score five goals a game. That's basically what I enjoy watching.
You know, I wish you were in charge of the whole league because there's not too many guys that like risk.
No, well, you know, I mean, you have the puck. That's good defense when you have the puck. And the puck possession, I think, is important.
Is that why you like Brian Campbell so much?
Yeah, I like those types of defense. I really do. Like Duncan Keith, you know, those are guys, you know, Ekblad, Mike Matheson. That's a guy that can carry the puck all night long. You'll never get tired, so. Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with my DNA, and that's what I like to see, and I like that's what I prefer looking at, you know, than some, mm-hmm. you know, a guy that's a chip and chase guy.
Mm-hmm. Now, Campbell for Olesh, just mentioning Brian Campbell and looking historically, Brian Campbell for Radoslav Olesh was a real nice deal for you and the Florida Panthers. When you look back in your history of making trades, making deals, how often do you look at ones and go, yep, you know what? Win talent there, lost talent here.
I don't look at it that way at all. No, I look at what's best for our team. Once a player leaves and you trade that player, I hope he does well because that team will want to deal with you again. But I look at what's best for our team. We got the player we needed. That's the player we wanted. Let's move forward with that.
Like, what's your best trade story? Like, whether it was a deal that came together fast or one that you really had to wrangle over and you're like, oh, my God, I cannot believe this garbage.
We had a deal in Chicago it was a trade deadline kind of last minute thing. And I just started in Chicago and we had three different offices going. And Bob Pulford was in one and Dan was, I think Rick Dudley was in another and I was in another. And, you know, I got a fifth for this guy. And so I got a fourth. And the guy said, I think I got a third. And then I kept telling the guy, well, we got a third now. You know, and so we ended up getting a third for a guy that we were probably hoping to get a seventh for. You know, so, because it was just started. One guy was using his contact in the organization. Another guy was answering a call from another contact in the organization. And everybody was kind of like one up each other. And I don't know how true the last offer was, but I said, I got a third. And the guy says, okay, we'll give you a third, Dad, damn it. You know, that kind of thing. Pardon my French. But the trading history is fun. It's different. You get to know the same thing in this business. You got to know the other general manager, too, what their likes
mm-hmm.
and dislikes are, what kind of players they like and dislike, and whether they're willing to trade or not, whether they're willing to try and skin you.
Yes.
You know, and some of them try to win the deal.
Is there a guy that you won't deal with?
Like I used that Patrick Waugh, you know, can you keep a secret? You know, so can I. That's my favorite line ever. But they're good guys. You know, yeah. I know I played with a lot of them. I played against a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
The newer guys, you know, it's hard to figure out some of the newer guys. But overall, 30 good guys. I don't know if they'll say that about me, but they're a good group. You know, they're pretty fair.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of trades, I love asking general managers this question. What do you think of when you see us go on the air at 8 o'clock in the morning on trade deadline day?
I go, we're going to do till 3 o'clock.
You tell our bosses that?
Who's watching this? You know, who's watching this? Because we live in Florida. Nobody's watching it, you know. Not that particular part of it anyway. But
as far as the deadline itself goes, from a general manager's point of view, do you not look at us and say,
2 days I hate that day in July 1st.
Yeah,
you know, those days are two dreadful days in a general manager's life. <You know? laughs> I like August 1st because now it starts to come towards you mm-hmm. in the free agency. And trade deadline, I like to get my work done before the deadline if we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had success at the deadline and deals that didn't help us at all. You know, so sometimes it's much ado about nothing.
More trades are done in the draft now anyhow, aren't they?
That's probably the ideal time to do it, you know.
Do you like the draft?
I love the draft. Well, that's my favorite part of the up and to the draft. Now scouting, going to these games and mm-hmm. watching kids and going to those small rinks, that's my favorite part of the job.
Now, speaking of draft, you were part of in 1970, was you and Gilbert Perreault, one of the more
scouting's improved
ones.
Since then.
But take us back, you know, Elliot.
Well, the only reason I picked second there was because we played, the Toronto Marlboros had a great team, and so did the yep. Junior Canadians. And we went to seven games in the finals, and we had sold out crowds at Maple Leaf Gardens and Montreal Forum. You know, wherever Gilbert went, I went. You know, like, I mean, that was yeah. a guy. So you figured you'd be in the picture if you were right there with him, chasing him. So we had good success because we had a good team.
Yeah.
And I thought that if Vancouver lost the toss, they'd take a Westerner because that was – but I ended up going to Vancouver, and it was an interesting – I didn't find out about it till probably a week later. I was at the Orr Walton Sports Camp when I got a call. I said, oh, by the way, you got drafted second overall. I go, oh, that's very nice. And then they offered me a contract, and I'd won the Canadian Junior Golf Championship in Kelowna the summer before. And they offered me a contract. I said, no, that's not going to cut it. I'm going to go play golf, so thank you very much. I was bluffing, but it worked.
Do you remember how much the initial offer was?
It wasn't very much.
Do you remember what you signed for?
Yeah. Well, I'm not telling anybody.
You know,
KCRS is listening.
You know,
I don't want to, can they go back that far? In Canada, I don't know.
You know, because you've been in as a broadcaster, an executive, a player. It's almost 50 years now, Dale.
Yep. I left home. I left in Rouyn Noranda when I was 15. Went to Oshawa Generals. Turned 16 at that camp, or that first year in October. So, yeah, it's been 52 years.
Like, what stands out? Like, when you think about your life in hockey?
I don't know. It stands out. I still, you know, think of my dad taking me to the rink when he was coaching his senior team or juvenile team. That's what I remember the most. And then, you know, your first game in the league, first game in Chicago Stadium, Team Canada 72, being a part of that team. I've been very fortunate and been blessed, and it's been incredible.
Do you save things? Do you collect mementos?
No, I'm not terrible at that. Now I regret that I haven't kept a lot of it, but I have a few bits and pieces. But no, I never was really one of those guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had a double blue Pittsburgh Penguin jersey that people are still looking. You know, I got a guy that called me and said he had it and he wanted a lot of money for it. I said, well, good luck with it. But no, I never was that kind of a guy.
Let me ask you about your broadcasting career. There's one, I mean, the Eric Daze, Sean Hill, the shot, the comment is still goes down in infamy as one of the great calls of all time.
Good thing you should explain for people who haven't seen it.
It's an Ottawa-Chicago game, and Sean Hill's in front of the net, and Eric Daze spins around and fires it, and it looks as if it's gone off Sean Hill's knee, and he crumples in front of the Ottawa net.
And a shot block made by Hill, but the Hawks looking like the Harlem Globetrotters with that passing sequence, and Sean Hill blocked that in a bad spot. He's down.
And Daze, we know he can really fire it. Boy, Nichols, great work shielding the puck to feed Craven. His quick shot, not much on it, but just missed. Would have beaten a goaltender. And then back to Craven, to Nichols, out to Daze, and Daze let it rip.
So the replay a couple of different times, right, and Foley's walking through it, and Dale's on color, and as it comes to one close-up, you can see that it doesn't get him in the knee, and as Dale puts it,
well, from the second angle, it doesn't look to me like it hit the knee.
I said he got in a bad spot.
Not his knee, maybe his wee knee.
That afternoon, my youngest daughter, Kristen, was at her cousin's birthday party, Charlie, and he got hit in the daddy got hit in the peenie with the baseball. So that was like about 3:30 in the afternoon that game. Sean Hill went down and blocked a shot, and he was writhing in pain, and I know that pain. I've been there, right? And Foley's going, I think he got it in the knee.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it wasn't the left knee, it wasn't the right knee, I think it was the wee knee. And he spit the bit and out the but then he goes down the hall in Ottawa, he's gone. The play stuck continue. They drop the puck. They carry Sean off the ice, and then they drop the puck, and I don't know what to say. I mean, Pat's not back. He's gone. You know, it's like the old we got it, they got it. You know, number 52's got it, number 4's got it. Let's go to commercial kind of thing.
What passing on that sequence, though, huh, Dale?
We had a lot of fun. Pat was a great friend, and we had a lot of fun together in all those years.
What did you enjoy about it? What did you enjoy about broadcasting?
I think the spontaneity, having to think quick on your feet, you know, and really I wasn't one into the guy was from this high school or from that junior team. Or I wasn't a stats guy. I'm still really not a stats guy. I was just like, what happened? Why did that happen? And Pat worked alone for a long time. So Pat would do the play-by-play, and then he would jump in on his own as far as doing this color because he was always working by himself. And so I told him that I don't get paid by the word. You just go to it. When you stop breathing, I'll chime in. Mm-hmm. And so I would think of another way to describe the play if it, I could see it happening. I could sense when it was going to happen, so I would remember why it happened. And so I could sit back and kind of predetermine. But it was about the spontaneity of it. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice job if you wanted to play a lot of golf.
Well, you know, that leads me, you know, you talked about in your story about signing in Vancouver. That leads me to a couple things I wanted to ask you about. When I mentioned to someone we could be talking to you today, they said you have to ask them about the golf stories. Michael Jordan. I guess, have you played with Jordan before?
I only played with Michael once.
Have you played? You play with him once.
Yeah.
What's it like to play golf with Michael Jordan?
He's an icon, right? And he's just a, when you get him in that environment, that's why he plays golf, because he can be himself and no one can bother him there. But I like the action myself. You know, I played, one of my jobs was playing golf at the National. I was, you know, hustling at the National, playing $100 nasties and one down presses up to one of the great golf courses in the country, is the National in Toronto here. Those are fond memories, and that's what, you know, I'd come home with some cash in my pocket every day, and they'd play gin rummy for $1,000 a line. I was reluctant to do that. I worked too hard on the golf course to get the money. I wasn't going to give it back in the card table. But, you know, he liked the action, you know, and it's tough to beat him because he had great touch and fearless, you know.
But tough to beat him. You didn't say you didn't beat him.
Well, you know, that's another secret. I got a lot of secrets. I'm saving it for a big book.
Yeah, well, I think, and, you know,
would you write one?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like I talked to Bob Birdie a lot in Chicago. And,
yeah.
Well, humorous, you know, it'd be light and funny and truthful.
Have you played with Tiger?
No, no. I walked with him at Hank Haney, who taught him, was a good friend of mine. So I, at the PGA in Medina one year, we on a Tuesday, I walked inside the ropes with Hank and Mark O'Meara and Tiger. It was kind of, it was fun. I did play in the Senior Open at Sahali in 2010. I played a practice round with David Frost, Corey Pavin, and I'm friends with Jeff Sluman. So, you know, that was a pretty fun day. Enjoyed that. Missed the cut, though, but that was, you know, I wasn't expected to do anything there anyway. I had just gotten a job in Florida, and I qualified for the Senior Open. So I went and embarrassed myself for 2 days, but it's a lot of fun.
Best golf memory?
Winning the Canadian Junior probably was, yeah. You know, in Kelowna. Birding the last hole to win that tournament. It's like it happened yesterday, 1969. You know. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drag this back to hockey. Okay. Only got a couple more moments with you. We appreciate your time, Dale.
No.
From the time that you were drafted by the Vancouver Canucks 1970 to right now, which position has evolved the most? Like, to the point of almost being unrecognizable if we looked at the game from 1970.
You start with the goalies. You look at the highlights of 70s and 80s of the leather pads and the Kaniskis and the stand-up goalies and how much room there was,
mm-hmm.
and how small the trapper was and how athletic these guys were to stop the puck, you know. But obviously in those days there were five or six guys that could shoot the puck, you know, 80, 100 miles an hour. Yeah. Now everyone can. But I think the goalie equipment and the size of the goaltenders has been probably the most impactful of all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that the speed and pace of the defenseman carrying the puck. You know, I think Bobby Orr changed the game more than any other player and athlete in the history of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have success anymore. And you can play. You can see in this year's draft there are a couple of really good small defensemen that are going to go high in the draft. Because with the new rules, you need speed. And it doesn't matter how big you are. It's how smart and how fast you are. And, you know, with the chip and chase and the no red line, you better get back there in a hurry and get the puck out. You know, that's why Brian Campbell excelled for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of players, Duncan Keith, you have to have speed on the back end. And I think those are the two most impactful things that I've seen.
You have a good friendship with Doug McLean.
Yep.
He told me that the angriest you ever got at him once was that he made a crack about Florida. And, you know, you've been with that organization now, as you mentioned, for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You take a lot of pride in that team. I think at times we've wondered if they're going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any doubt that they're going to survive?
Oh, we're on the way up. Vinny Viola's made a complete commitment. He's a great owner. You know, we had a tough year and a half. It's a reset this year. But they came back to me in the off season and wanted me to go back. And And I was reluctant to leave. I didn't want to leave because I was invested in those young players and building that hockey program there. So I'm glad I stayed. The future looks brilliant. You know, we're going up the middle. We got Barkov, Trocheck, and now Bjorkstrom and McCann, and we got kids come tip it. We got a great Heppo Niemi had 90 assists playing in Swift Current this year. So we got a tremendous amount of young players in our system and on our team now that are going to be playing with these other younger guys. And I think our future is so bright for our franchise. Mm-hmm. But I'll get mad, Doug. I mean, you agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter. Everyone has their own opinion, right? Just
he
like our scouts.
He said, I've never had Dale so mad at me.
Well, I got a little bit of fire still in the belly.
That's the thing. Like,
don't let the snow on the roof.
Well, that's the thing. Like, have you thought about how much more you want to do this?
I never felt better. I've never felt more excited and more comfortable with ownership and our plan. And I'll do this till I get it right. I'll do it till we win, you know, and win a lot. I want to win a lot. I wasn't on the ice in Chicago when they hoisted the cup. Mm-hmm. And I want to be on the ice with these young guys in Florida. So that's my goal. So I don't know how long that's going to take, but I'm going to do it.
Speaking of Scott, a lot of those players loved you, and that was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
How many of those guys called you?
I talked to them a lot.
Yeah.
They're a special group. You know. I hadn't had a drink in 16 years, and when they won the cup, you know, a lot of times we talked about drinking out of the cup together, and when they won, I got a lot of phone calls from them, and meet us here, meet us there, we're going to be... And they got me pretty well hammered. Kaner and Taves and Buff, Big Buff, one of my favorites, and Dunk, and go through the Seabrook. They're great kids, you know, mm-hmm. and so I'm happy they had great success there.
I got to ask you, do you have a thought on goalie interference and where we're at with it right now?
I think that we've made the right decision this week. You know, I think that's only going to make it better. But when you think about it, 1.4%. Here you go. I'm going to analytics.
Here
we
go. Okay, here come now. Okay, numbers guy.
1.4% of all goals that were impacted by goaltender interference. There are 80 some goals that were challenged, and I think 54 or so, 5 of them have been overturned. And we're getting close to being perfect on it. And I think now moving an official into the war room, having them make the call. They've been making calls on kick pucks, on high sticks. Let's stay consistent. I think this will even make it better. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-2 league right now. Every game is so vital. I mean, guys' careers are on the line. We have to get it right.
I can tell you're tight with Daryl Sutter. What's his line? It's a 3-2 league.
Yeah, well, you know, Daryl's a smart guy. You know, and he's got a great sense of humor, and that's what I like about him.
And so do you. Dale, thanks so much for spending
thanks
time
lot,
with us today.
My
much
pleasure. I'm glad I could fill in for the great Vincent Trocheck. This kid's going to be a special player. He already is. But
he already is.
I really like him.
Thanks, Dale.
Thank you very much.
Looking to stream the entire Stanley Cup playoffs? Sportsnet Now might be the product for you. Available to anyone over the internet, Sportsnet Now gives you 24/7 access to Sportsnet's channels, including content not available on television. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones and tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. In addition to every game of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you'll also get the Toronto Blue Jays with a subscription, plus the MLB postseason and World Series, Raptors and NBA playoff matchups, Premier League, and, oh yeah, MasterCard Memorial Cup, and much, much more. Visit snetnow.ca for more details. As Florida Panthers general manager Dale Tallon, I've always been curious about people writing books about very specific moments in sports history.
Okay.
Always wanted to hear or read something about the day the NHL Players Association officially came off the salary cap idea of the 2005 lockout, which I believe happened in Niagara Falls, interestingly enough, on Valentine's Day in a conversation between Ted Saskin and Bill Daly. That would be an interesting one for me, how that conversation went.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, I would love for someone to write a book on what happened last year with the Florida Panthers.
Well, I mean, we could be repeating some of that history with Carolina. You know, there is a story to be written about the statistical revolution is happening in the NBA. It's happening in Major League Baseball. It's happening in football. The Eagles are really going to punt it into the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still struggling with it in hockey. But you're right.
It's coming.
And it's, you know, it's here to some bother. Degree. It's just
resistance
a matter of,
is futile,
yeah, it's
folks.
Just a matter of how much, really. But yeah, I think
that. But just with all like the Gallant firing, the Tom Rowe, you know, was the owner hitting the dressing room and like all that kind of stuff.
I think it's an interesting story.
The sidebars with Sifu, like all of it.
You know, the thing is, like, I was thinking about this. Like, do we do the interview with Dale? Like, do we do all this stuff? And oh, here's an example. Like today, the Panthers, and we're taping this part on Wednesday, had their morning skate in Toronto, and Luongo starting against Toronto, but yeah. Reimer came off the ice with the rest of the scratches, and he was doing a scrum, and people are like, it's the fifth year anniversary of the 2013 collapse.
Just enough.
And I'm like, I joked with him. I said, we'll stop asking this question around 2050, and he just laughed. But I think sometimes, like, we look too much on the past, and part of the thing is get something fresh out of him. So I thought about, like, how much do we talk about last year? And then I was like, you know what? We've heard a lot about last year.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to go in depth, like, in a book, I would read that. But there were so many other things I want to hear.
The interesting thing about last season from today's point of view is it doesn't seem as if, and again, we'll see, they may end up making the playoffs.
Yep.
Even if they don't. I thought that last year would have been a more significant step back for the Panthers than it's proven to be. From Gerard to Tom Rowe, you know, now they have Bob Bugner. It seems a lot more settled behind the bench. I would have thought that last year, because what do they always say about draft picks? Oh, you missed on your first round, you set your franchise back 2 years. I always thought that by the end of last year, I remember saying to myself, man, the Panthers really set themselves back a while here. Doesn't seem to have happened.
I believe a couple of things about that. Number one, I think that it shows that if you believe you've made a mistake, don't compound the mistake. End it. And do that. But the other thing I believe is part of the problem with what happened in Florida is that it's like fighting World War One. You've got the Germans in one trench and you've got the French in another trench and nobody's moving.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the people who supported the quote-unquote computer boys and you've got the people who support Talon and they refuse to admit that the other side did good things. I'll give you some examples. Like Borgstrom was a guy who was picked under the computer boys.
Although I don't think they had a ton of info on him because he was in the junior league and not playing senior.
Now, I could be wrong about this,
okay.
But they hired Cam Lawrence,
yep,
and a couple guys who did draft things.
Yep.
Certainly some of it was eye test, but I do know they looked at some comparables with him and they really liked what they saw.
They did, and they also liked Alex DeBrincat, which was bizarre because in the second round, one before DeBrincat, when they had a chance to take DeBrincat.
They took Mascheron, right?
Adam Mascheron out of Kitchener.
Yeah, who's now asking for a trade.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right, because I had heard they were going to take DeBrincat.
What everybody believes in Buffalo.
You're right, totally about that. As a matter of fact, somebody sent me a note saying
they're taking DeBrincat.
They're taking DeBrincat, and they didn't take him. But anyway, like, those guys' biggest mistake was relationships. They did things like they fired the trainer. They changed people and jobs. They created a lot of ill will. But they had some good hockey moves, and they gambled on Marchessault, and they won big on that one. They signed some good contracts, like the Barkov extension, the Huberdeau extension.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at where we're going now with contracts. Those are going to be great deals, yep, for Florida. Now, you look at Dale, and the people who don't like Dale, they say, well, he gave up Marchessault this year. But you know what? Dale, he finds players. I mean, we talked about the interview. They made big mistakes because they had no need to do it after the year they had the year before. But the bottom line is, if they have any success, the honest truth is we're going to look back at that and we're going to say both sides did things right and both sides did things wrong. And if the Florida Panthers ever win the Stanley Cup, we're going to say that they wouldn't have done it without each other.
How did other sports get there quicker than hockey? Bring something like this up on Twitter and good luck. Just turn your computer off and come back in a week.
Oh, it's so painful. It's so dumb. You know what I think it is, Jeff? I think the other sports are more static. Like, you can do things in baseball and basketball and football that you can't do in hockey because of the pure random nature of the game. And the other thing, too, is that we haven't yet invented the stat or the ability to capture things that tells it as much as the other sports have. And I think it's because of the random nature, the free-flowing substitutions. You know, we're getting there, but we're not there. Far from there.
That reminds me of one of my favorite new quotes.
Which is?
And I think about this often when I think of conversations like this or have conversations like this. Dr. Andrea Ospina says this, "I never trust people who are sure of things. I trust people who are temporarily confident in their current interpretations."
I believe that. That's a great quote.
To me, that is such a money quote. Here it is again. "I never trust people who are sure of things. I trust people who are temporarily confident in their current interpretations."
I love that. That's great.
That one is money. Okay, you know what else is money? What you wrote about in 31 Thoughts, vis-a-vis what to do with healthy scratches, i.e. dress them. Walk us through this idea.
So there's a question I'll ask at the end of the GM meetings, maybe in a couple of days, like, did I miss anything? Was anything interesting there that we didn't hear about or didn't get out? And a couple of guys told me about something Chicago proposed, and it was that. And, you know, John McDonough, who's been the president of the Blackhawks for a decade now, he came from the Cubs. When I reached out to Stan Bowman, he told me it came from a conversation with John McDonough, and they said, explain this healthy scratch thing to me. And he says, well, there's guys that, you know, they don't play if they're not in the lineup. And he goes, well, you know, basically said, we're paying some of these guys $1 million a year. Why can't we use them? And Stan Bowman said that, you know, as far as he knew, one of the reasons was that it used to be in hockey, you were down 4 goals, guys started stirring things up, and, you know, they didn't want guys.
Okay, send the gorillas over the boards.
And those guys don't exist anymore. I think it is a great idea. Like, the more I was listening to it, the more I loved it. Like, why not? You know, Paul Kennedy, who works in Tampa, the sideline reporter, mm-hmm. he texted me today. He said, so the other night, Tampa was playing 11-7 against Arizona, and one of their forwards, I think it was Adam Earn, got hurt. So all of a sudden, you're down to 10-7, and then Hedman took a big hit in the third period. You're down to 10-6. So what's wrong with saying, okay, we lose the defense on the first shift, we're putting somebody else in?
See, where I like it, yeah, I like that idea, where I like it is in blowout games.
Yes.
Blowout games where, you know what, Hedman, have a seat.
Somebody brought up to me, and I thought about Frankie Corrado. Frankie Corrado's career got seriously damaged because Toronto wouldn't put him in the lineup, and they wouldn't risk putting him on waivers.
Yep.
How many times in that stretch would they have maybe put him into a game when it was over and said, okay, Frankie, play 20 minutes?
You know where I like it as well?
Where?
Shootout specialist.
Yes.
Yeah, the guy that's not going to get out there, play 5-on-5 in regular shift, but the shootout happens, oh, yeah, we got our weapon waiting.
Yes. Or, like, you're down 2-0. We got an offensive player who's not playing tonight. We're going to throw him in. Or we're up 2-0 and somebody can't guard the ice he's standing on. We're taking him out and we're putting this guy in. Like, why not?
Is this like the modern-day version of sitting Peter Klima the entire game and then putting him out in, what, the yes. third overtime?
You know, why not? And, you know, if you're worried about guys causing trouble, then they're subject to extra supplemental discipline.
Yeah. First of all, what's trouble? A scrum? Yeah, a face wash? Yeah, like, seriously, it's embarrassing.
You throw
what's trouble?
Cottage cheese at somebody. Or the worry was that, you know, if you carry 23 instead of 21 and it benefits the wealthy teams. And he said, well, you know what? Not really, because we're capped out. We can't carry 23.
Yeah, everyone's capped.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just think it's – I'm always looking for new things. I think it's creative.
I like it. And I like when we do the Ask 31. We good to do Ask 31? We're good to do Ask 31. We got a bunch of them today, so let's
– I saw one. I was laughing when I saw
it. Yeah, I think we're going to get to that one first. Okay, this from Marvin Bibla. Ask Frege if he has any interesting stories from his days in retail. Elliot, it's Marvin. My Ask 31 question, do you ever think that they will allow a coach a choice of taking a penalty shot versus having a two-minute power play when a ref calls a penalty shot?
So it's actually Marvin's question.
Two-part question.
First of all, I don't think they should be allowed. I think it should be penalty shot all the time. I bet you some of those guys would rather take power play. And I'm like, no, it's a penalty shot.
Every single time.
We need more penalty shots. Don't let them not take penalty shots.
Yeah, the shootouts devalued the penalty shots. Not as sexy as it used to be.
No, I disagree.
There's only one thing that I like about the penalty shot now, is that's when the ref points to center. Although I do like the international symbol. He puts the X over his head. That's pretty cool, too.
Penalty shots are fun. Jeff, you're nuts.
Okay,
so this is what he's talking about. So for those of you, there used to be grade 13 in Ontario. There isn't anymore. It goes up to grade 12. But my grade 13 year, I took half the year of school, and I worked half the year to save money for university. And my job in retail was at Radio Shack. I worked at a Radio Shack.
Hey!
Not far from my house. So, and Marvin was my manager.
This is your boss here tweeting it.
So
okay.
I saw that. I started laughing because I know he's asking for one specific story.
What is it?
A, he's wondering if I remember it, and B, he's wondering if I'll tell it. So A, I remember it, and B, I am going to tell it. It was very late in my time there. I was going to go away for the summer, and there was a day where I was working by myself, and I was a pretty good employee. I was conscientious and everything, but I was working by myself, and it was busy. It was really busy in the store. And there were a group of people that came in. They were asking me a bunch of questions. I made a couple of sales. I was like, wow, today is going really well. And then I realized it was a setup. And so Marvin came in. Hey, Elliot, how you doing? How's it going today? Hey, it's been really busy. Good day. Doing well. He goes, okay, glad to hear. And he walked back to the store, at back of the store. He did a double take. And he goes, Elliot, where's our fax machine? And they had distracted me, and one of them grabbed the fax machine and walked out with it. They stole it. They walked out. And fax machines were big at that time.
Like, sure.
This was not a small thing. So they distracted me, and they walked out, and I felt horrible.
Oh, get the hook out of your mouth.
First of all, yeah, they got you.
Yeah.
And B, because they'd stolen a fax machine on my watch. And he was a great boss. He was really good about it. There was another guy I'd worked at a different store before. They transferred me over there because it was closer to my house. And later that afternoon, the phone rang, and it was my old boss. His name was Doug. And he goes, hey, Elliot, how you doing? I go, oh, I'm okay. And he goes, let me ask you a question. I go, do you have any extra fax machines there? And like, they were just killing me. They were trying to make me feel better, but I felt like a big idiot.
That's awesome. I think I might be ColecoVision at Radio Shack once upon a time. Okay, from Ryan M., craziest NHL entry draft story, whether it be a trade or argument, etc. I don't want to date it because it might reveal who the people involved are.
Right.
But there was one where an NHL owner, and this is wide open. I think there might have been cameras rolling on it, so this tape does exist somewhere.
Okay.
An NHL owner screaming at the team president and I think general manager for not being allowed on the floor because they had the wrong pass. Because all the seats at the table were taken.
I think I know this story.
You probably do because it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And it was intense watching an owner scream at a team president like that. Like uncomfortable. Like you can't turn away, but you're watching a car crash. That was the most uncomfortable one that I ever saw.
Oof.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
That because you want to just crawl. You
want
right.
to crawl out, but I'm just like, oh boy, I'm just going to look at my notes. I'm going to look at my phone, and oh man, I can't believe I'm seeing this.
I mean, there's always the ones every year with the kids who don't get taken, and those are brutal to watch.
Yep.
Don's totally right. Unless you're sure, don't go. The one of the ones that's one of my personal favorites is a few years ago, we were working the draft, and there was a big trade going down, and I was pretty sure I had it. And I had a source on one of the teams. And I texted him, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is happening, but I need the final confirmation. And I wasn't getting a response. And I was like, I know he's sitting there. I just saw him sitting there.
Just saw him check his phone and then put it down.
I turned, and he was doing a slight nod. He didn't want me to catch my eye. He was doing like, imagine nodding like a centimeter. It's like, he's trying to tell me. But he doesn't want anyone at the table to see he's telling me yes.
So like the Mr. Johnson said, I think he's talking to you.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And then finally I figured out what he was doing. I was like, okay. Oh,
okay.
I was able to
confirmation.
Mention the trade, but I was sitting there. I said to him later.
Tap your foot three times if it's a good deal.
Yeah, I said to him later, I said, like, was that supposed to be like the imperceptible nod? And he just started laughing. That was probably the one I remember the most.
Oh, that's good. Oh, you know what? Remember the before the Phil Kessel deal, there was that day at the draft where Pittsburgh was the only table that didn't clear out.
Yes.
And there was like, you know, almost like, you know, fist pounding on the table and like really loud debate, almost like we were way up shooting stuff to go back to Sportsnet Central. And you could hear them, like the Pittsburgh crew at the table. I believe it was over the Phil Kessel deal.
Yeah.
I think the conversation started.
Yes.
That day, was that? Was it?
Well,
was
I
it
think
the Phil deal?
A little
like
bit.
Everybody cleared and Pittsburgh stayed.
Yeah, I think there was stuff on the Phil deal because I think the two guys that Pittsburgh was not willing to include were Matt Murray and Derek Pouliot.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think they were weighing it out. And then it got done a few days later on July 1st. There's always ones like that. Like last year, Pierre Dorion and Rob Blake were standing together for a while, and we knew they were talking for Gavrik, which eventually did happen.
This from Kishore Hari, who, by the way, has an amazing podcast, Inquiring Show, which is fantastic. Wants to know, do you blow it up if you're the Dallas Stars?
Boy,
beat Philly last night.
That is a great question. Like, I watched that game against Vancouver on Sunday night. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah.
They should be better than they are. Like, when you look at them, what do you think is missing?
I'll start with net mining, which I still think is an issue for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, Bishop got hurt.
Secondary scoring after the top dogs is still a big deal. You know that Spezza and Hitchcock weren't going to be a fit. That's proven to be true. You don't know how much Spezza has still left in the tank. But even if you look at the offseason names that Jim Neal brought in, I mean, Martin Hansel, everybody knows the injury history. And
the thought can't stay healthy.
Same thing. Like you bring in guys that have a hard time keeping the hospital bracelet off.
I'm surprised at how it's gone under them. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know where you're going here. If you're Dallas, the biggest question you have is you got to sign Tyler Seguin in a year.
Yep.
Tyler Seguin's a $10 million player.
He'll use whatever Tavares gets as his model. Not that he's going to get the same number.
Okay, so that's my number one question.
No.
Are you signing Tyler Seguin?
I think you have to.
Unless you suddenly get another option. Or you don't like the number. But the guy's having an MVP-level season.
Right shot center, come on. With these types of numbers.
You've got Ben Bishop signed for 5 more years.
Their travel is awful. Like, I get Dallas's travel is bad, and you really need to go on a two-goaltender system maybe more than any other team in the NHL. I get those challenges if you're Dallas.
Like, I think Jim Neal's really smart. They can't get the goalie thing sorted out. It's like Philadelphia. Like, Philadelphia, since Bernie Perron, historically, they can't get the goalie thing figured out.
Yeah. Let's wait for Carter Hart to be ready.
Like, they can't get the goalie thing figured out.
Nope.
But I look at that talent, and I think there is no excuse for them to be where they are. And there was no excuse for that game against Vancouver the other night.
This is from Jacob Holtman. Any chance we'll see Chara play in the NHL as long as Yager/Chelios played?
I mean, if anybody could do it, he's the guy.
He keeps himself in amazing shape. Why not? And he still has the appetite to do it. And it's not as if he's embarrassing himself out there.
No, he's determined.
From Tyler, Sharks guy, 661, with how good Kane has been for the Sharks, scored again last night, do you see him re-signing with them? And if so, how much are we talking? It's a great fit.
How can you not?
It's been a great fit.
I mean, they've got 20-something million in cap room.
You John know, Tavares, what? Sorry?
What does he want? I mean, obviously, if Tavares hits the market, like San Jose made a big pitch for Stamkos. They were the stealth team there.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do the same thing for Tavares if they get the opportunity. But I think if you're Evander Kane, you have a good situation. If San Jose comes to you and says, we're going to make it worth your while, but we're not going to blow the bank. Mm-hmm. Are you going to say, you know what? I just got out of a bad situation. I'll do what it takes to be in a good situation. Or if San Jose says, you know, we're not going to give you everything we could. We want to leave something in the cupboard. Are you walking? To me, that's Evander Kane's decision.
You mentioned John Tavares. Okay, well, I mentioned John Tavares and the San Jose Sharks. We know that St. Louis will be swinging there. We know that Montreal will be swinging there. Certainly, there will be other teams. New York Rangers are an obvious one. We discussed that earlier.
Yep.
I'm more convinced than ever as we approach playoffs and July 1st. I'm more convinced that he's gone.
You look at the way this season's ended, I think there's reason to be less optimistic than I think all of us have been. But I think the biggest question is, are the Islanders going to make any changes? Are they going to go to Tavares and say, is there a change you want made?
Yeah, I want the new rink ready tomorrow.
Well, yeah, you can't. I mean, you know what? Like, he's not Aladdin. He's not going to be able to do that. Is your last bullet, John, what changes do you want?
What do you want? You call the shot.
Maybe you don't give him the full shot. You say, John, give us what you want and we'll try to make it happen within reason.
From David Short, why is it top GM prospects seem to not want the Carolina job? It baffles me that with only so many GM positions available, they're having such a hard time.
It's money and power.
So what was the number you put out there? Was it 400,000?
Well, Nick mentioned 400. I heard between 350 and 5, and the 5 might be high.
And this is the reporting that we talked about last week, which is...
Yeah, like Ron Francis, I think, was over 2 million or around 2 million. I believe Ron Francis has a piece of the team. Don Waddell, he's making, I think, a decent number.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Peters, I think, is 1.6 next year. Mike Vellucci, I heard, who's coaching the American Hockey League team, I think he's around 6.650. So one of the reasons I think they're not offering a ton of money is because I think Peter Carmona took care of a lot of people.
Right.
And he doesn't want to do that. You know what? It's like if you want the best, you got to pay for it and you've got to give them control. Now, when I spoke to Tom Dundon once, he disputed that he wasn't giving people control. I think that's semantics. I think he looks at it like we create the plan and you run the plan, so you get control within the plan. And an average GM would say to you, no, I create the plan and we run it with that, so I create the plan. And they see that as autonomy. He doesn't see it the same way.
Right.
So I think those are the two big issues.
Steve Ness, what are your thoughts on changing the definition of the Hart Trophy to include the word success?
I don't know.
I have a change I'd like to propose.
I don't worry about this stuff
too
much.
The top player in the NHL trophy.
Yeah.
Say who's the best player this year.
You know what I would say to the tweeter who asked that question?
Steve Ness,
is that I think the voters have determined that that is what it is because only four guys have won it missing the playoffs. You know, I think if you look at the Norris, Erik Karlsson lost it in the year where he didn't make the playoffs. Drew Doughty lost it in the year he didn't make the playoffs. I think we've established that you've got to make the playoffs to win a lot of these awards. I mean, the one thing I vote very...
So Matthew Barzal's not getting the Calder.
Well,
then.
No, that's the different one. I think the
so
Calder,
that one's okay, though?
I think the Calder is different because the situation is different. But I'll tell you one thing I've...
You're going to have the success for every other trophy except the Calder. Oh, these poor kids.
Because oftentimes you get drafted to the worst team, right? Like... I have a thing with the Calder that if you miss a lot of games, like I didn't vote for McDavid to win it.
Yep.
He was on my ballot. The year that Gabriel Landeskog won it, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had about the same number of points but played 20 less games. I believe if you play a full season, that's an accomplishment as a young player in the NHL. So I'm looking at guys like McAvoy, Besser.
But don't you say to yourself, I mean, injuries are a matter of luck.
They are. Like Besser's one was a total fluke. So was McAvoy's actually kind of.
You know, like how
but,
can
I, but I do think to play.
Like, you know, you can't
games,
injure yourself out of the lineup. How can you injure yourself out of a trophy?
You know what? I think 82 games as a rookie is hard to do.
I think it's hard to do. I think you're lucky if you can make it through.
Yes, I mean there is some luck. I'm looking at Kyle Connor, who's coming up
Holy
on 30
geez,
goals.
I know.
Barzal, obviously, I think is the guy, but like Kyle Connor has got 30 goals. And he might not even be a finalist.
Alex DeBrincat's right there.
Yanni Gord's got 20-something goals, and he might not even be a finalist. Like, it's unbelievable how hard this is.
Luke, Colorado moving the AHL team to Denver.
Yep.
If they cleaned house on the coaching, would Jim Montgomery be a good fit there for the AHL team in Denver? Jim Montgomery to the American Hockey League from the Pioneers.
I spoke to him actually on Monday. Because I wanted to see, he was a finalist with Bob Bugner for Tampa, as we talked about with Dale. And I don't think he would do it for an AHL job. I think he'd only leave for an NHL job and a good one. He's got a good setup there in Denver. It was pretty funny. I called him. He got 5 minutes before I turn on the barbecue. So it was a quick conversation.
That's a good line in there, by the way. He wanted Bjorkstrom for another year, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He sure did.
Aaron Stolar, as a Capitals fan, should I approach the playoffs with any expectation beyond that of inevitable crushing disappointment in the first or second round? I kind of see them more battle-ready for playoffs this year than ever before.
It is so close.
Uh-huh. But this is the year they've had to grind for points.
You know what? Like, I actually thought last year was the year.
Everybody, that's what they built towards.
Hey, I would say, Alex, I'm an optimist by nature. I don't think you can ever go into anything expecting crushing disappointment aside from dating, really. Yeah, I understand why you feel that way. I just couldn't live life like that. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. I understand crushing disappointment. I grew up a Chicago Blackhawks fan. Like, there wasn't even anything to be disappointed about. They were just never good. I just refuse to go into it every year believing it's going to be terrible. I just cannot. I do not understand people who live life like that. You hope for the best, expect the worst, but you hope for the best.
All right, how about this one then? We'll close on this. Dave, Baltimore, at Baltimore Davey. We talked a lot about him today. Where does Zdeno Chara rank amongst the all-time greats? Not on the top 100, along with Malkin might have been. Those would have been the two most obvious ones.
Yeah, but you know,
ones.
It's tough. Like, okay, the best defenseman of all time. We're talking Bobby Orr.
Bobby Orr, Nick Lidstrom, Larry Robinson.
Full-time hockey, Eddie Shore.
Full-time hockey, Eddie Shore.
Ray Bourque.
Doug Harvey.
Chris Chelios.
Like, as far as dominant defensemen, and there was that while there when him and Bergeron were on the ice nobody at the same time, nobody touched the puck.
You know, he didn't, but, you know, the interesting thing is he wasn't at that level in Ottawa. He got into a new level in Boston, which I respect him for. I think that when you look back at the way he started his career and how far he's come, that's the most impressive thing to me about Chara, is that he went from a gangly, ugly skating-looking 18-year-old to a Hall of Famer.
I remember talking to Stan Butler once about him because he had him in
Prince George.
And I was like, what did you guys do with that when Chara showed up, right? Because that's when, you know, some Slovak player, Hossa, went to the Portland Winterhawks. Yes. Chara went to Prince George to play with the Cougars. What did you do with that? And Stan just sort of laughs. And he's like, yeah, I mean, you talk about raw hockey players. Here was a raw giant. And I remember... I asked Stan, I said, what was his first fight like? And he said, frightening. And he said, I can't remember correctly. I think he said that, I don't even think that Chara knew how strong he was at that point, but it was ugly.
Yes. And when you see it now, like Brian McCabe, actually I saw Brian McCabe, he works for Florida, he was there today. And I don't think Chara's as one of the top best ever.
Oh, I see him as this era's Larry Robinson.
But I don't think, like, Larry Robinson had a run of almost 20 years. Chara was a bit later. I'm not insulting Chara.
Right.
I'm thinking that the best ever to me are Orr, Lidstrom, Larry Robinson, Eddie Shore, because the guy won 3 MVPs, right?
Doug Harvey.
I think that Chara's the next level. Like, he's with Chelios. He's in that group.
I look at two different ways. Danny Potvin, I think you throw into that mix as well. I look at it two ways. There is longevity.
Danny Potvin, he's here today too. Like, Danny Potvin to me is the guy who gets the shaft historically.
He did in 76 when he should have been MVP of that Canada Cup.
Like, he was the real tone setter of those Islander teams. He was nasty. I think Danny Potvin is the guy who gets the shaft historically.
And you know what he used to do consistently where everybody else was just firing back scratch and slap shots from the point? He was the guy that just wristed him from the point.
Yeah.
He was like, and how many defensemen are taught right now, this day, don't worry about the slap shot, just get it through,
He still looks like he could kill somebody.
You seen the size of his paws?
Yeah.
They're ginormous.
Like, when he gets his hands on you, you're trapped. You're not getting away.
Final thing on Chara. Here's how I look at it. There's longevity, and then there's peak performance.
Yeah.
And this is where I look at someone like Eric Lindros, who didn't have longevity, but as a peak performer in that era where he was dominant and became that prototypical guy. And everybody afterwards, if you're a big guy that can move your feet at that, Chris Gratton. I mean, how many contracts did Chris Gratton get based on he's kind of like Eric Lindros?
Yeah.
Right? And I look at Zdeno Chara, and to your point, even if it's not going to be the longevity because he went through the Islanders and the Ottawa Senators, and it took a while until he turned into the Chara that we know today – even though the longevity is not going to be there. As far as a peak performer goes, I equate him with Eric Lindros. Like, there's that period there where he was the best, the scariest, the possession monster.
Yep.
Like, when he was on the ice, the Bruins had the puck and they weren't letting go of it. And a lot of it was Chara.
And he set the tone because everybody worked like him because he worked.
And you still see it. I mean, look at the Winnipeg Jets with Logan Stanley. He set the table for giant defensemen.
Yes.
And it's funny because there's two streams that are running through the NHL right now. There's the Chara light. When you get that big guy, he'll always get that break, and Logan Stanley's the obvious one. Whereas sometimes, and we see this in the first round every year, we just talked about Dallas, they have Miro Heiskanen on the horizon, smaller D that can move their feet.
Yeah.
But Chara is still keeping it open there for the big guy, for Shrek, making sure Shrek always has a spot in the NHL. And so for that, Zdeno Chara, I'll put him as one of the best ever.
First ballot Hall of Famer.
For me going away. All right, that's it. Thanks to Emil, our producer. Thanks to Elliot Friedman, as always, the writer from 31 Thoughts. Visit that fine piece at sportsnet.ca. And thanks to everybody for listening. Yes, that means you on the treadmill. That means you walking your dog. That means you goofing off at work right now when you should be working. And right now you're listening to the podcast. We thank you for the downloads, and we thank you for the earballs. We thank you for supporting this podcast and all the associated sponsors. Thanks. We're back next week. More 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
She's touches, pushing, pulling, punches, ragged, bluffy lunches, pulling off a fast one, riffing off the last one, reeling in the big one, fished in, fished in, grifting, grifting, grifting. Faking it to make it, never give, but take it, building trust through kindness to exploit the finest walls and bridges, burning time and table turning, double dipping, earning, lifted, lifted, grifting, grifting, grifting. It's cheese and money, for what it's worth. You're the brainchild, gifted at birth. Gifted at birth.